deceived me, now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes. I can see for miles and miles and miles and miles.
Hello, listeners. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Seattle, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the Seattle area and beyond. The goal of this program is to raise human consciousness and to bring light where there's darkness. We will only have the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it will be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Today, we're very fortunate to have as our guest, L.A. Marzulli, a famous and accomplished Hollywood writer, film producer, and researcher, who has produced a series of groundbreaking UFO films and books. We will be discussing his latest book and film in a few minutes when we go live by telephone to Los Angeles area to interview him. We will be taking call-ins after 3:30 p.m., and I wanted to give out our studio numbers. Our call-in number line here is area code 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington. Our toll-free number is 1-888-298-5569. And before we begin, I would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla Community College, my angelic and earthly family, the Quest Bookstore in Seattle, the Leading Edge Bookstore in Seattle, the Vajra Crystal Book and Gem Store in Seattle. Our upcoming guests include Daniel Brinkley, a famous medium and psychic, Dr. Helen Caldicott, one of the most famous medical doctors who's spoken out on the dangers of the Fukushima nuclear accident, James von Prague, one of the world's most famous psychics and mediums, Dr. Stanley Monteith, a well-known radio talk show host, Ahono and Angel Rose, two of the best Akashic readers in the United States, and Dewey Meyer from Portland, Oregon, who's one of the best energy healers on the West Coast. She'll be on the program next week. And also, I wanted to say, for those who heard Christine Day a couple of weeks ago, she will return to the show on May 30th, and this time she will bring a Pleiadian from the Pleiadian civilization on her show. Stay tuned for an out-of-this-world experience. Let's take a quick commercial break and then come back on the air with Mr. Marzulli. Hello, listeners. This is Ted Marr, the host of the Out of This World radio program, and I'd like to tell you about Mr. John Ho. He's considered one of the best scholars in Nostradamus and has an amazing track record of predicting all the winners of the U.S. presidential election with 100% accuracy for the past 44 years, as well as being able to accurately predict the weather patterns and political, social, and economic events both in this country and around the world. Every year, Mr. Ho publishes his predictions book, and we are very fortunate to have him now tell us about his latest publication, including his predictions for 2013 and 2014, including the Hopi Indian prophecies. John, could you please tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in Nostradamus?
I have always been fascinated with the patterns of history, more fascinated like a doctor is about the patterns of disease, try to cure the problem. One sees in the past a continuing repetition of the same mistakes in different costumes and different political and religious persuasions in different cultures, but essentially it seems the more we change, the more we stay the same. And there seems to be a critical mass of these collective habits reaching a singularity in the next few decades, where if humanity does not break out of this cycle of repetition, the civilization is threatened. So my books, which are 23 and counting right now since 1987, published in 19 languages, deal often with futurology and the more subjective science of prophecy, the traditions around the world, of which the most important of these prophetic figures is Nostradamus, which is what I'm best known for on History Channel and television, as well as in my book.
Fascinating. John, where can people obtain a copy?
Well, this book is called Predictions for 2013-2014 because it is essentially a look at a period of time between May of this year, 2013, till the end of 2014, which is literally a breath of fresh air of reform, can happen to limit the impact of quickening history, which is going to begin in the next 10 years to be some of the most upheavalful and disruptive and revolutionary periods that human history has ever known. And so we are in a period right now, and this book describes it in all the dimensions, from politics to religion to economy to global warming, ecology, and human consciousness, that looks at forecasts dealing with how we can lessen the blow of these quickening times that are coming in the mid-decade, or even avert and speed up the possibility of what is also often promised in the future as a more balanced human race, a more enlightened human race living in the golden age.
Fascinating. Well, I think your book is on point, and especially right now at this time in history. And listeners, I strongly recommend everyone to obtain a copy of this publication. It's nearly 500 pages long, and it contains so much information that we really can't do justice to it in this short commercial. I purchased a copy myself, and I think it's one of the best prophecy publications that I've ever read. For only $12.50, you can have a copy of the full work, or for only $3.99, you can obtain a shortened version.
For more information, please visit my website at outofthisworld1150.wix.com/outofthisworld.
Outside the box, outside the norm, inside your radio. Alternative Talk, 1150.
Hello, listeners, we're back. For those who are just turning in, this is the Out of This World radio program with your head host, Ted Marr, on KKNW 1150 here in Bellevue, Washington. For those who'd like to call in later, our phone number here is 425-373-5527, or toll-free within Western Washington is 1-800-298-5569. If you'd like to also take a look at our biographies and the web links for our guests, including for Mr. Marzulli, our web address is www.outofthisworld1150.com. Our guest today is L.A. Marzulli, live from Los Angeles. He's the author of the Nephilim Trilogy. The Nephilim Trilogy made the bestsellers list and continues to thrill readers a decade after it was published. He received an honorary doctorate from Pacific International University for his work on the Nephilim Trilogy. He's also the author of the nonfiction work, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. He's an accomplished author, lecturer, and researcher. He has appeared on numerous television and radio programs and is famous for his groundbreaking research and work. Most recently, he teamed up with film producer Richard Shaw to create the Watchers series. I just watched his most recent film, Watchers 7, and it's one of the most amazing films I've ever seen. He's also come out with a new book entitled Further Evidence of Close Encounters. I've also read that book, and it's one of the most amazing books I've ever read. Hello, Eli. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Ted. Thanks so much for the accolades. I really appreciate it. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, good. Good. Well, you're doing work that very, very few people are doing, L.A., and I really, on behalf of our listeners, really appreciate all your hard work. How did you ever get interested in the subject of UFOs and supernatural events?
Well, it's very interesting. I had a UFO encounter when I was 12 years old at Boy Scout camp. I was walking up a ravine, taking a shortcut to go to lunch with three other boys, and I was the last boy in that line. And the lead guy goes, "Wow, what's that?" And the other two guys go, "Yeah, wow, what is that?" And I said, "Where?" And they said, "There." And they're all pointing in the same direction. I looked up, and I saw the classic silver disc. And this is circa 1963, mm-hmm. somewhere in that window. Mm-hmm. I didn't write it down, but it's in that window. And I think it was either spring or fall. Mm-hmm. I'm inclined to think it was spring, but it could have been fall. But it was a clear blue day, and it was a metallic craft, and the sunlight glinted off of it, and we saw it for about 20 seconds, and then it shot straight up into the air and out of sight in a blink of an eye, which, mm-hmm. of course, whoa, what was that? And we came running back. We saw a UFO. We saw a flying saucer, and everybody gathered around us and listened to us, and by the evening meal, remember, this is lunchtime, by the 5 o'clock evening meal, the other three boys denied that they had seen anything. Mm. And because of the ridicule, mm-hmm. it was my first real lesson in herd mentality, the way mm-hmm. people will basically lie and say that, well, I didn't see anything. in order to maintain the status quo, to be part of the group, as it were. And, you know, I was raised Catholic, and I left the church right around that time at 13. And from there, it was indoctrinating myself into the works of Carlos Castaneda, Ostensky, just all sorts of, you know, bizarre Eastern mysticism. I wound up with a guru. I took silver mind control. I became an agnostic. I had spirit guides. And believed at one point that these were, you know, the Space Brothers come to rescue us. I have a slightly different take, or a much different take on that now. Mm-hmm. And that's reflected in the books and the videos that we make. There you go.
Well, in both your new movie, L.A., called Watcher 7, and in your new book called Further Evidence, you mentioned lots of interesting examples of evidence of UFOs, including a gentleman named Dr. David Jacobs, who I believe he was at Temple University in Philadelphia. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about his research and what he found?
Well, I've known Dr. Jacobs for a number of years. He actually came in for an interview, written interview with me many years ago. For a book called The Alien Interviews, not a book about me interviewing aliens, but people who have actually interviewed or have been involved in the UFO phenomena. And, you know, Jacobs is an incredible researcher. We interviewed him for Watchers 7, UFOs, Physical Evidence. And he's been involved in exploring and investigating the abduction phenomena for decades. And so he's sort of, along with John Mack and others, he's sort of the go-to guy when it comes to the abduction phenomena. And one of the reasons why I gravitate towards him is because Jacobs believes, after years of study, that the phenomena is not a good thing. In fact, when asked, he says, "I am in despair for the future." We have him saying that in Watcher 7. "I despair for the future." What he means by that, without putting words in his mouth, hopefully, is that he realizes that there's a breeding program that is going on between these entities, which are moving with impunity and taking what they want, basically on a global level. And he's afraid that they're beginning to integrate what he would call hybrid beings into the population. And he truly believes that it's a takeover from a dominant species over a lesser species. And that's why he is in despair for the future. And, of course, not many people believe him, nor many people believe me. Most people are completely asleep at the wheel when it comes to any of this stuff. But we've got the whole point of Watcher 7, Physical Evidence, is we believe we've got physical evidence that the phenomena is, in fact, real, burgeoning, and not going away. And so we go from Dr. Jacobs discussing the whole idea of this breeding program to a person who has an implant, and we show the implant, an X-ray, CAT scan, and then finally through an ultrasound. And the implant is there. And in Watchers 8, we actually took it out, and that was astounding what happened there. We've also taken some of the other implants that Dr. Roger Lear, who we interviewed extensively in all the Watchers film, has taken out. And we've gone into a laboratory and looked at them under a scanning electron microscope with an EDX feature, which breaks it down and tells us exactly what these implants are made out of. And you know, it's high strangeness, to use J. Allen Hynek's term. It's definitely bizarre. And Watchers 8 was a first for me because, and I think it will be a first for a lot of people, because we tracked one man's abduction or implant removal from the first X-ray to actually taking it in the lab and cutting the little sheath which the implant is encased in, which is just incredible to see that. And the chief scientist, Steve Coburn, was able to do that, actually take a razor blade and slice it open and remove the metallic implant from this clear sort of casing, grayish casing that the implant was encased in. It's just unbelievable stuff. So, you know, the phenomenon is real. There's a quote that I often use, you know, while we may disagree as to what is behind the phenomena, was causing the phenomena. We can agree that the phenomena is real, burgeoning, and not going away. Mm-hmm. And I maintain that no matter how far apart our paradigms and our worldview might be in regard to who and what these entities are, where they're from, we do agree that the phenomena is real mm-hmm. and it's ongoing. It's increasing in number. And we talked about this not only in Further Evidence, the book, but also in the DVD, Watcher 7, the idea that something is happening. The sightings have been increasing. Peter Davenport recently was on Coast to Coast stating that UFO basically doubled again from about 400 or 500 a month to 1,000 in April to 2,000 in October, November. So something's going on, folks, and it's time to wake up and smell the coffee, as it were.
Why do you think our government knows about it, L.A.?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt in my mind. I'll tell you a quick little story. There was a man who I knew several years ago, actually many years ago, and I was interviewing this particular person who was a two-star general for one of the branches of the service. Mm-hmm. And I had interviewed this man before, and I was sure that he knew something about Roswell. He was older than I was by about 15, almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he just fit that timeline pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interviewing this man in his backyard, and I was asking him softball questions. I've told the story before, so it's not like it's an exclusive here on your show, but it's an eye-opener. And, you know, you learn as a journalist or a photojournalist or an interviewer, and I know this, you know, you make the guest as comfortable as possible, and you get them relaxed, and, you know, before you start throwing some zingers at them. And so I got him relaxed for about 20 minutes, and at this point he was, like, slumping down in the chair. It was a hot summer day. I was in my interview clothes. He was in shorts and a Hawaiian shirt, I believe. And we were drinking lemonade in the backyard. He was slouched down in a lawn chair. And after, like, 20 minutes of this, I threw him a fastball, threw him a zinger. And without changing my cadence or tone of my voice, or I just said extremely matter-of-factly, again, no change in my body language. You learn to do that. So it's just like, you know, you throw the fastball, but you're not giving it away. And I just said, well, what was it like when you saw the retrieved bodies from the Roswell spacecraft in 1947?
Oh, really?
Just like that. Yeah, just that matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And this guy's body language, Ted, went off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means anything, which I think it does, it was sort of a smoking gun for me. I mean, he sat up in his chair, he crossed his legs, looked around, uncrossed his legs, fiddled in his chair, and then the steely-eyed general came back. And he looked at me with this deadpan face and goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. And I just said, I just thought maybe you might have known something. It was pretty much the end of the interview. But, you know, I'm just sitting there to myself going, oh, my gosh, I think I got the guy. Now, that's not conclusive proof, obviously. And skeptical say, oh, wow, you know, you're out of this cage, that type of deal. And and that may be true. But for me sitting there and watching his reaction, I felt that we may have uncovered something, shall we say. I believe that our military has been involved with these entities for quite some time. Paul Hellyer has stated so. Stephen Greer has stated so. Many people in the UFO community have stated that there's a liaison between our government and so-called extraterrestrial beings. I think one of the most fascinating portrayals of this might be in Steven Spielberg's movie Taken, when there's finally contact. And that's a 20-hour miniseries. And if your audience isn't familiar with that, definitely rent it on Netflix and watch it, because it's really well done. I mean, really well done. But it never made it to primetime television at all. It was only shown, I saw it only on the Sci-Fi channel. And I don't even know whether you can rent it anymore. I'm sure you can, but I haven't tried to investigate it any further. But it's sort of fallen off the map. I mean, it was the Sci-Fi channel showed it a few years in a row, and then that's it, nothing else, and no more. But there's one scene in it where they have contact with these beings, and this man goes back to see the entity. because the entity has shown him his dead father.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's manipulating his mind. And, of course, he goes back, and he's not supposed to be alone with the E.T., and he goes back, and the guy, E.T., kills him, and E.T. escapes, that type of deal. But Taken is also very much concerned with the breeding program and talks about the breeding program, talks about the abduction scenarios and the fact that the government is tracking this stuff. And I believe that. I mean, I think there's an element in the government which has tracked it. I think that people who got too close in the 90s were taken out, and I mean that. I can't prove that. That's conjecture on my part. But the game has changed because they realize that nobody cares. You know, you can have all the – nobody cares. I mean, Dr. Roger Lear said something in one of our interviews with him, which I thought was incredibly telling. He said, you know, more than likely, if a UFO lands on the 405 freeway in Los Angeles, no one's going to care about that. They're just going to, hey, there's a traffic jam. Oh, when are you going to get this thing out of here? And he's right. I mean, that's unfortunately where most people really are today. Most people, you know, really don't care about anything else but the next paycheck, what game's on, and, you know, what's for dinner, and hopefully there's a nice cold six-pack in the fridge. And This is a game-changing event. When these guys show up, and I believe that they will show up, and I stated on my blog recently, and I'm being a prophet here or a prognosticator, but I would not be surprised if we see something in 2014. It might not be full disclosure, but it will be some sort of an event where, I'm just hypothesizing here, some event that will shake a lot of people awake and get people talking about the phenomena. And I think it might happen this year.
Yeah, well, if everything goes well, LA and my dear listeners, that may happen on May 30th when I'm due to have a live Pleiadian on the show. The parking lot behind the building here at KKNW is large enough for a small shuttlecraft, so I hope it can come on, and I hope to get one in the studios. So I'll let you know if we have one on. I'm serious about this. I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
I know. I would love to, be part of that interview if it's any way possible.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll be talking to Christine Day. I had her on a few weeks ago, and she said she would be bringing on a live Pleiadian from the Pleiadian civilization onto the Chicago program on May 30th, and I'll certainly, she's traveling right now, but as soon as I reach her, I will, I'll call you up, and we'll arrange something out of this world.
Sounds good.
For a little bit of background to our listeners, my own view is that I don't think all aliens are the same. Certainly the events, the extraterrestrial information that Mr. Marzulli has provided in his Watcher 7 and in his excellent book, Further Evidence, it has lots of, there's physical evidence, there's also pictures that have not been doctored, they're the real thing. But you have to remember, I don't think all ETs are the same. Do you, L.A.? I think there's some here that are benevolent and some aren't. I don't know. I don't know what you think. That's my own viewpoint on it.
Yeah, well, that's a $64,000 question. My business partner, Richard Shaw, believes that perhaps there may be some races that are here that are benevolent. I am not so I can't sign up for that yet, only because in all the experiences that I've dealt with, and going back to Jacques Vallée and J.L. Lekainik, you know, sort of the pioneers of the UFO phenomena, you know, and Vallée has stated openly that UFOs are closer to demonic activity than anything else that he's ever investigated. And as a someone that has gone through different paradigms, like I mentioned earlier, and then at 30 years old had sort of a Paul on the Road to Damascus experience. My experience with these entities is that they are masters of deception, and they seem to lie and do so habitually. Again, that's Vallée talking there, his book Messages of Deception, and the fact that he talks, and other witnesses have said this. I mean, I interviewed Karina Sables, and who's been an abductee forever. And she said the same thing. She no longer believes anything that they tell her because they lie and do so habitually. Same thing with Blossom Goodchild. I interviewed Blossom for the book, and nice woman, and I wish her all the best. But I said, you know, Blossom, how can you trust these entities? And this was right after the whole October 14th thing, which was supposed to happen and didn't. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, that's really bothered me because I asked them over and over and over again, and they assured me that, you know, that the mile-wide craft was going to appear. Then, of course, it didn't, and Blossom Goodshot was left holding the bag. When someone deceives someone, that's deliberate. That means that they know what the truth is, and they are deliberately manipulating events and dialogue to mislead someone deliberately. And I have a real problem with that. You know, I don't care where they say they're from or how much more advanced that they are. Anybody who engages in that type of behavior, that's a huge red flag to me. Huge red flag. Because that means that they know what the truth is, but they're obfuscating it or they're misrepresenting it. And that's what apparently many of these entities do. Now, I know Paola Harris has come out talking about the tall whites, but where's the evidence? And again, it's just like, and I'm going to jump here a little bit, it's just like the Marian apparitions, which we've covered in Watchers. There's a ball of light, actually three of them, or four of them, over a Coptic church in Egypt, 2009. It's like right there. It's indisputable. I mean, there it is. Something is happening at this Coptic church. Well, the Christians and the Muslims are out in the square, and they're all clapping their hands and celebrating this thing. Well, and they say it's Mary of the Bible. Well, no, it's not Mary of the Bible. It's a ball of light. That's all it is. There's no Mary there. It's a ball of light. You know, and it's got an image with like a blue veil, but it's a ball of light. You know, and then it's got a smaller ball of light that's supposed to be the Messiah, the Christ child. Nonsense. Absolute nonsense. Why should I believe any of this? Because someone tells me it is? No way. It's just like if somebody knocks on your door at 2:30 in the morning, and my friend who is now deceased, Andy, of a radio show called The Edge, talked about this. So this is sort of his quote and his legacy, and I use it often. But if someone knocks on your door at 2:30 in the morning, you're not going to let them in, unless you're a fool. You know, what do you want? Where are you from? What are you doing here? Can I see some ID? You know, put your hands on your head. I mean, you know, you're not gonna open the door and let the guy in. Well, why is it that we do and give these guys a break on every level? And so I would like to believe that there's benevolent, you know, space brothers out there. But everything and the evidence that I've come up with after, you know, 25 years of looking at the phenomena, when you look at the abductions, when you look at the sexual experimentation that happens, the ovum is taken, the sperm is taken, people are absolutely terrified, and these beings know it. And they continue with the abductions. Look at the cattle mutilations where, once again, horrific things are done to the cattle, and it's deliberate. They drop the animal right back in the farmer's field. Why not drop it in the ocean where no one will ever see it? No, they drop it right. It's deliberate. It creates an incredible amount of fear. And I realize, you know, some of my critics say that I'm dealing in fear porn. Well, you know, prove it to me otherwise. Just because someone appears in your room and says, you know, I'm the Archangel Gabriel, or I'm Cluto from the planet Zip or something, why should we believe these people? Just because they say something, you know, and there's a test that I've learned, how to test the spirits. Most people don't know what it is, but there is a way to test entities that kind of pop in and show up. And it's a very simple test, and people find out. But let me, real quickly, what they're dealing with if they use this particular test. But string theorists and plasma physicists, I don't pretend to know too much about either, but I know this much, that there's people have been saying as of late that perhaps the universe is a digital simulation. Okay, and we're living literally in some gigantic holodeck here. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about this is there are ancient texts which talk about this very same thing. It talks about rolling up the heavens like a scroll. Now, I don't believe that that's allegory. I believe that that's a description of what we're looking at here. Rolling up the heavens like a scroll. That's bizarre. That's really bizarre stuff. And so if we are in a holographic universe, or digital simulation, then perhaps we are not looking at, you know, extraterrestrial beings from the Pleiades or whatever. Perhaps we're looking, and this is where Jacques Vallée and Hynek come in, perhaps we are looking at interdimensional beings that are interfacing with us. And that's the position and the paradigm I hold on to based on 25 years of research and based on just looking at the phenomena, what these craft do. They flit in and they flit out, and they defy all the laws of physics. And that's why I hold and adhere to the interdimensional paradigm.
Sure. Well, I think there's I told LA off the air that we could easily run this program for 5 or 6 hours with all the information he has in his incredible DVD and book. But let's take a commercial break. And for those who'd like to call in and ask LA questions, our number again is 425-373-5527. Or within Western Washington, the number is 1-800-298-5569. And let's go to a commercial break now, and we'll be back in the air in a few minutes with L.A. Marzulli. All right. Hello, listeners. This is Ted Marr from the Out of This World radio program, and I'd like to introduce our friends to Ahanu and Gail Rose. They are some of the best Akashic psychic readers in the country. Their services encompass accessing one's Akashic record. I think I'd like to just bring them on, and they can tell you a little bit about their work. Ahanu and Gail, could you tell us a little bit about the kind of work you do and the services you provide?
Yes. Well, I offer Akashic record readings, and really, the Akashic Records are the library of really the universe and creation and a person's soul journey through time. So the reading is a much deeper level. I was a tarot reader for 35 years, switched over to reading the records because of the quality of information that was coming through. But our biggest work is that we do groups every Sunday online, Akashic groups, where people bring very wide and varied spiritual questions to Source itself, about the world, about healing.
About relationships.
Relationships.
About big questions like, who are we and why are we here and what's going on the planet and where did we come from and where are we going? And it's not designed for personal questions, but for big universal questions of that nature. And it's a very, very popular group. It's more or less a very, very healing service in terms of intellectually understanding what's going on with people and their lives and their relationships. And we've helped people all over the world in this way.
And Ahanu is a wonderful spirit artist, and he paints what the spirit of love looks like inside a person. So his work is also very, very life transformative.
You both are doing such fantastic work. I've heard before that love is the most powerful force in the universe. And certainly if you're accessing that through the Akashic Records and also accessing the Supreme Being, your work is truly tremendous for people.
Yes, and we're, as you know, Ted, we're also a twin flame couple, which means that a lot of twin flames are meeting each other and coming together now on the planet, or at least having the opportunity to. And that's all designed also for this time period we're in to bring back that divine masculine and feminine energy in perfect balance so that we can move things along on this planet and actually solidify the male and female that's within all of us.
Well, that's just so incredibly fantastic. I met my own twin flame, reconnected with her last year after a hiatus of 30 years of searching for her. So I know what you mean by twin flame. You'll be on our program on February 14th, Valentine's Day. We'll be talking about twin flames and soulmates and true loves. And I can't wait to have you both on.
Sounds great.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, listeners, their website is linked up to my website, and my website is outofthisworld1150.com. And if you go there and just go to the link for Ahanu and Angel Rose, you'll see their show scheduled for February 14th, along with the link to their website. I strongly, strongly urge you to contact them if you'd like answers to why you're here, who is my twin flame or true love. And they can answer by accessing the Akashic Records and the Supreme Being. They can answer, probably provide answers for any question you want.
Ahead of the talk radio curve, naturally. Alternative Talk 1150.
Hello, listeners. We're back. For those of you just tuning in,
This is Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW 1150 AM here in Bellevue, Washington. For those who'd like, we have one caller. We'll get to her shortly, but our phone number here, for those who'd like to call in, is area code 425-373-5527 or toll-free within Western Washington at 1-800-298-5569. Before we take our call, I'd just like to preface quickly that I personally believe there are several different alien groups to visit this planet. The first group is called the Galactic Federation of Planets, of which the Pleiadians are a part. They're mostly human, and they're very positively oriented. The second group are what's called the Reptilians, and they are negatively oriented, and they're the ones, in my belief system, that's doing the abductions and a lot of things which aren't very nice to the human race. But let's go to our caller, Linda in Auburn. Linda, are you there?
Hi. Hello. Linda. Welcome to Out of This World. You're on the air. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi. I really wanted to relay some information. One is there's a site called Disclosure Project, and if you go on that and under conferences, there's a video called the National Press Club of 2001, and there's a doctor who worked part-time for 7 years, and then he went full-time gathering information on people who would speak because he had a lawyer that they were realizing there's been some cover-up and that's a whole illegal operation, so that if people were asked to not talk, that was not acceptable. And so they could, and so these are people that would are willing to go for a congressional hearing. He had 400 that he could do at that time that were ready to testify to Congress. It didn't happen, but 20 of them are speaking on that video. And then they did have a mock conference this May. Maybe you've told about this, I don't know. But that's very interesting. And at the end of that video, 2001 National Press Club, they mention about how corporations, one of them being Lockheed, actually had plans that somebody got a hold of a spaceship type thing that they had created, and that there's some kind of energy that they is possible to tap into, that's a free, clean, abundant energy source that has to do with a anti-gravity magnetic grid or something around the planet. And so that was one reason why he was very passionate to try to bring this information out. Then one other thing I wanted to relay to listeners is we sent these spacecraft out, Voyagers 1 and 2. Well, there's books called Voyagers Volume 1, Voyagers Volume 2, and the third one's called Angelic Realities. And if you read these, the first one is shorter, the second one is longer, more detailed. You can kind of tell that this is peace-oriented beings. Well, they basically say, we are guardians. We are actually who created you. So that's the big news. And it has two drawings. One, they say, you have intruder beings around you, and we're trying to, we could use your help. We can do what we can. They're farther away, it seems. But it's it has drawings of the two groups, you know, that are most close to our actors around us. And anyway, it's very interesting. It also explains about the crop circles. And if anybody looks at, there's some really good books on those, that most of them are positive energy imprints to balance the negative, the few that are negative energy imprints. And it even talks about that the agendas, they call them, they say they're not evil, they are unenlightened. They're not connected to source. They don't see the value in that. But they look at them as enlightened, and they say there is one form of alien being that shows up when there's a conflict, where some of them, you know, want our land, our earth. Some want to use it for a nuclear waste dump, and others might want our genetics. So they explain about those and how some of their agendas. One is exploitation. One is mind control. But anyway, so very interesting. And how we can, one way we can protect ourselves, it says, is to, some of our guardians look like us, so we can kind of visualize like the human form, and they shy away from that. That intimidates them. So it even gives us that tip and a few short meditations that are very powerful that, you know, can help elevate in this ascension. It's a specific time period we're in that they say is like five suns or stars aligning. That's interesting.
Well, Linda, I would love it if you could please send me those. I'll post it on my website. My email address for the show is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com.
Okay.
Yes, and I totally agree with you. I've actually, Ellie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. I wanted to tell you, Linda, that L.A. Does have that segment in his Watch Your Seven DVD, and the attorney I think you mentioned was Daniel Sheenan, a famous attorney. He's fought in other things as well. I agree with you. I think there is a free energy and anti-magnetic grid around the planet that can be taken advantage of, and most crop circles, I agree with you, are positive things. They're direct messages from the Galactic Federation, who has our best, and I believe our best interests at heart. But a lot of the negativity comes from a group affiliated with the reptilians who do look at humans, I believe, as a source of genetic material and DNA for their own population. And they're up to no good. L.A., I'm sure you have some comments on what Linda said.
Could I say one more thing, too? Just related with, in this book, it says that there's the reptilian hominid hybrid or something, and then there's also the Zetas and some other beings, too, Anunnaki, that look supposedly a little like long-haired Native Americans, but we can't say. But the Zetas, they said some are more willing to work with peace-oriented beings, and they said there's way more peace-oriented beings than not in the universe, but the ones that aren't are fewer, but, you know, so that they're the ones looking for the genetic material because their race is going towards extinction, and they like that, so that's all I wanted to say.
Go ahead, Ellie, I'm sure you have
Zetas
a lot to say.
Are the gray, what we would call the grays, are Zetas.
Correct. Go ahead, L.A. We'd love to hear your comments on that.
Well, yeah, thank you. Look, there's some ancient prophetic texts which talk about that even the elect would be deceived, that men would faint from fear from what's coming upon the earth, that an ancient entity known as the Fallen One will come with all signs and lying wonders. Now, those prophecies were about 2,000 years old. They have yet to be fulfilled. If you're going to create a deception where even the elect would be deceived if that were possible, then it's going to be a very highly crafted one, and that it will fool most of the public. And so, with all due respect, and I hear what you guys are saying, but remember, I come from that world. I've been, and I'm not trying to be arrogant here or sound arrogant, but I have been there. I have been third eye opened, you know, the whole deal, the whole gamut, spirit guides, you know, all that stuff. And I believed, like you believed at one point, that these entities were our space brothers, like Benjamin Cram of Maitreya talks about. They were here to give us wisdom, a DNA upgrade, perhaps. They were here to usher us into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge. I no longer hold on to that paradigm because the evidence, in my opinion, overwhelmingly supports a deception. And, you know, again, we go back to Jacques Vallée and J. Allen Hynek, the sort of the fathers of ufology. Both men have stated openly, and his book, Messengers of Deception, says it incredibly clear, and you can't say it any more plain than that. These entities seem to be masters of deception. Now, here's the deal. As far as the different types, like Nordics, like tall grays, like the tall whites, rather, the grays, the reptilians. What if these entities can change their shape and appear as anything that they want to appear as? And this is what was so telling about Steven Spielberg's 20-hour miniseries Taken, because that's exactly what they were doing. They can shapeshift and appear
pretty much anything that they want to appear as. Mm-hmm. And so, again, unless a person can prove to me that they know how to test the spirits, in other words, when something manifests, how do you know what you're looking at? Is there a litmus test that we can tell and use to determine whether the entity is benevolent or malevolent? It's a very simple test. And without that, why should we believe anything that anybody says? It goes back to the 2:30 in the morning knock on the door. Just because you've got technology, just because you say this, how do I know that? How do I really know you are who you say you are? And that's why I'm just saying we need to be really, really cautious about this, really cautious about it.
I agree with you fully about it. And I think it's good to have skepticism, friends. But I was wondering, LA, if you could share your test with our listeners so they could perhaps use something like that if they ever encounter a situation like that.
Well, there's actually one very simple technique. And this might sound religious, but it's not.
Okay.
Unfortunately, people confuse the two. They think they know what's going on. When I say this, I'm trying to preface this, but they don't, trust me, they really don't. Mm-hmm. 2,000 years ago, a man by the name of John wrote something, and he told us, in order to test the spirit, this is what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very simple. Did Yeshua come in the flesh? That's your first question. That is the question. Did Yeshua come in the flesh?
Okay.
And you say, well, that's you know, why would that make them crazy? Why? What's the deal with that? I mean, mm-hmm. it's a very simple statement.
Mm-hmm.
It drives them bonkers, and this is like a three-hour conversation because it gets into this whole cosmic chess match, which I've written a whole book about, which we don't have time to get into. We're down to, you know, less than 10 minutes before the top of the hour. But
right.
if my premise is right, that there is a cosmic war going on between two different sides, one who is incredibly malevolent and the other one who is very benevolent, then the protocols of some of the war that we see, some of the protocols we don't see, but I believe this cosmic war, which has been raging in another dimension, is now beginning to spill out into ours. And when you say that, when you challenge that entity, did Yeshua come in the flesh? If it's anything but yes, then you know what you're dealing with. And the reason why they can't answer that, and it drives them crazy, because they know it spelled their defeat. When Yeshua came in the flesh, it spelled their defeat, and they know it. And it drives them bonkers. Now, you know, you can believe that or you can not believe that. That's a 2,000-year-old prophecy from a very ancient text, and it tells us how to test the spirits. And it has to do with the cosmic war, which has been going on, raging in this other seen dimension. And we're told that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that's what, you know, I would use if I was accosted or in front of something like that. There are other things that I would say if I came up against something like that. Again, it goes back to the paradigm. I don't care if the most beautiful angelic being shows up in my bedroom at 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it looks like. Do you understand that? I want to make that really clear. It's got mm-hmm. long, flowing blonde hair and a flaming sword and a purple robe, you know, and it's just like 8 feet tall and it's just shining light. Baloney! I don't know what I'm looking at. These things can shapeshift. First question, did Yeshua come in the flesh? And if it's anything but yes, I know what I'm looking at. If I watch his body language and it starts to get kind of ticked off or he gives me a long, rambling answer that sounds spiritual, I know what I'm dealing with. Now, that's never happened. I've never had to use that. I've been accosted by unseen forces, demonic stuff, and I know how to repel that with a slightly different way, but it's the same deal. And it's interesting how this... just a quick little sidebar, the woman who was completely demon-possessed in Gary, Indiana, and the kid's walking, you know, her son is walking up the wall backwards. You can't do that, okay? You just can't do that. But that's what they do, and they always come to rob, kill, and destroy. And there's no question here, and I'm not equating the two phenomena together, although I believe that there are many links, as Jacques Vallée states, that there's the UFO phenomena is closer to the demonological activity than it is to extraterrestrial. That's right from Vallée's playbook. So what's interesting is like, you know, these guys were up against it. They feared for their life. And that's a whole different deal. That's not deception. That's like in-your-face evil. I get that. But just because some entity shows up in my room, as I stated, why should I trust it? I don't. Mm-hmm. I can't until it answers the right way.
Well, I think you're
that's
right.
That's my two cents on it.
Sure. And I think it's good for everyone to be cautious and, of course, skeptical. Linda, thank you so much for your call. I was going to ask LA a couple more questions if I could.
Sure.
You've written in your book about the great cover up in UFOs and the possible moon bases on the dark side of the moon. What could you tell our listeners about that? I remember you've mentioned that in your book. So,
well, it's very interesting, and there's no way to vet this stuff. But I sat down with Jose Camille a while back. And, you know, we looked at some of the structures that he has taken on the moon, and there's several photos which are quite telling. You know, what the heck is that? For instance, there's one with a crater, that you see the crater, and then the next shot, there's the same crater, but it's got like a pathway in it. And then the third shot, there's a structure. Well, you know, I don't know what we're looking at. And it's, you know, I find it very interesting. You know, your caller mentioned the citizen hearing on disclosure. Well, in 2013, in April, there was a citizen hearing on disclosure, and one gentleman basically stood up and said, we have an intergalactic space force. We have a space force. You know, we've got bases on the moon. Now, you know, the public isn't going to know about that, and we they keep telling us with the rocket fuel and an aluminum tube, and up we go. According to Bob Lazar, you know, there's an element that these extraterrestrials are using, which creates an anti-gravity effect. You know, Tesla sort of talked about this stuff, and
sure.
I believe my gut feeling is, yeah, there's something going on up there. That's the short end of it.
LA, we've only got a few minutes left. Many of our listeners perhaps are not familiar with Bob Lazar. Would you mind just quickly, briefly outlining his experience with the UFO phenomenon?
Whose experience?
Oh, Bob Lazar. He worked down in Nevada at Area 51.
Oh, okay, yeah. Lazar was in Area 51, and he was. And look, the critics have gone up against him, and I won't mention their names, but you know, people have called him a liar and all this stuff. And I met Lazar years ago, and you know, I listened to the story, I read his book. He's never changed it. He's never embellished it, and now you can't. You know, he's tired of the public and the ridicule, and he's just basically not taking any more interviews because we tried to get him for Watchers 7. What's interesting about this is he stuck to his story. He was out at a place called S4 in Area 51. There were different UFOs that were parked there, and I believe this only because of my friend Gary Schultz, and I've got the picture. I'm staring at it right now, that he took, I believe, in 1987, I'm going to say, 88, of a human pilot alien craft over Groom Lake, Area 51. This is before the X-Files. This is before anybody knew about Area 51. And Gary Schultz and the crew are out there. You can't go there anymore. The mailbox road and all that, the government bought that land up fairly recently. So that vantage point is no longer accessible. But he was out there on a Wednesday. They learned that when they flew them was a Wednesday night, because they learned that most people, it's the least amount of traffic. People are home, and no one goes out on Wednesday night. So they would fly these craft at Wednesday night. I'm staring right at it. It's on my wall, and it's the classic silver disc. Well, Lazar, you know, talked about this, talked about the sports model that was there. He talked about element, I think it's 115 or 117, I forget the number. But that was there, and it was, you know, he worked on the propulsion system. There were no moving parts. And he talked about the anti-gravity, which basically pulled the craft. That's how it would work. And he never changed his story. He never embellished it. And he stuck to it. So I'm inclined to believe Lazar. And I realize there are people who don't. That's fine. But, you know, I've met the man, and I've listened to his story. I read his book, saw the video. And I believe what he has to say.
Okay, excellent. We've only got a few minutes left. L.A., are there any closing remarks you'd like to make to our listeners?
Yeah, I just think we're moving in a time that ancient prophecy warns us about. And it says that in the latter days there'll be wars and rumors of wars, famines and pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, and troublesome times. This text was written 2,000 years ago, and it begs the question, someone seems to be outside our space-time continuum that is calling out the future and does so with great specificity. With that in mind, surely we can, that one statement, earthquakes in diverse places, is an absurd statement to make 2,000 years ago. How would someone, let's say, living in Europe, know about a 9.0 earthquake in Fukushima? Well, now we see it in real time, don't we, because the satellite network, which covers the globe, and we actually watch that tidal wave come in to the Fukushima prefecture in real time. And it sure is a 5 or 10 second delay or whatever because of the satellite, but it's real time. And so now we know that prophecy, in my opinion, is being fulfilled. We know about earthquakes in diverse places. And, you know, that's a heads up to me. It means that some of these prophecies, many of these ancient texts, are now coming to fulfillment, and I find that interesting and also very sobering at the same time.
Well, I hope everyone's enjoyed the program today. You've been listening to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, on KKNW, 1150 AM here in Bellevue. If you have any comments or questions on the program, please call my toll-free number at 1-888-879-8339. Or you can contact by email to me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Our website is www.outofthisworld1150.com. And I hope you have a wonderful, fantastic weekend. Goodbye, everyone. You won't find a thing to choose.